Hi, this is John Barnes, and you're listening to Cop On.
Joyous and glorious welcomes to all of you, Fruity Loops. It's Cop On Podcast. We're back. It's Thursday, I think, the 14th of March. We're recording this and going live on YouTube. Before Liverpool play Sparta Prague in a return match, and we haven't spoken for like a week, and it's been a pretty eventful week. And we're going to here to talk through it with me. I'm delighted to have Nigel and Faye back. So brilliant to have you both with us. Nigel, it's been, God, I've got to do the math, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, roughly 4 or 5 days since Manchester City scraped a point at Anfield. There are two outcomes that are both kind of true from that match. Number one, Liverpool are an incredible football team, and if we play like we did in the second half, we're going to win the league. And number two, Michael Oliver, I suspect him of cheating because it was that egregious a decision. And apparently he said on the microphone, according to Jan Molby, who works in broadcasting, when he didn't give the penalty, he said, I got a good view of it. And for me, it's just a normal collision. He couldn't do anything about it. So for me, it's no penalty. Thus influencing greatly the judgment of Stuart Atwell on VAR, who then must decide, do I override my mate who's above me in the hierarchy of referees and get into trouble politically? Or do I just say, okay, go with whatever Mickey says? And Michael Oliver's team, this is still part of part two from the outcomes from Sunday. Michael Oliver's team, including the two linesmen or assistant referees, they were exactly the same three who went to the United Arab Emirates earlier in the season. Exactly the same officials to get a bit of extra money. Now, I don't want to scream corruption. I don't want to shout corruption from the rooftops, but it doesn't look good, does it? So are you, Nigel, it's a long way of asking, are you in camp one or camp two or both? Are you thinking, staying with the positives, we're freaking amazing? Or are you in number two and you're regretful of Michael Oliver? You put a face, his face, over the dartboard and you're chucking darts at his weird, ugly face every morning.
Well, starting off on, just you took what I was going to say. They went out to the United Arab Emirates. You've got to be looking at that. They've definitely, referees have been paid. There is absolutely no two ways about it. I'm getting off that as quick as I possibly can because you could go on about it all day. Our lads were fantastic. You know, we played against a good team. They're a good team. They are a good team. They're playing against one of the best players in the world, De Bruyne. You know, he did that quick thinking for the corner was really, really good. And even an average player can be on the same wavelength as a great player every once in a while, John Stones. But once, after about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, we got started getting the grips of the game and they weren't in the same league as us there. After that, we were absolutely fantastic. They're all going on about Haaland this and Haaland that and Phil Foden. And well, somebody said Gerald Kwanzaa was limping going off the field. That's because like he had Foden and Haaland in his pocket.
Yes.
So it was brilliant. It was I thought most of our guys, no, all of our guys were brilliant. Kwanzaa looked like a 10 years younger Virgil van Dijk, and Virgil van Dijk looked like Virgil van Dijk. We had the best performance by a midfield duo in the Premier League this year. Endo and McAllister were absolutely sensational. They were absolutely amazing. And I love Wataru Endo's new song, by the way. I know it's the Sadio Mane song, but it's brilliant. It's really
Can you give
good.
Us a rendition?
No, definitely not.
You always refuse. You're too expensive. If someone wants to get a GoFundMe together, maybe we can persuade Nigel to give us a song. But yes, I saw that one, that one doing the rounds. Yeah, but Wataru Endo, excuse me. What a legend. So you're staying with the positives, Nigel. That's what you're right, doing from that thing. We just put the referees aside, stay with the positives because there's so many of them. Hey, this is something that is absolutely true, isn't it? Because there was a brilliant post I saw on Reddit, Liverpool FC Forum, and somebody put the starting lineup compared to many people's perception of each of those players at the start of the season, right? Someone's just joining us. But there are so many stories. Oh, Nigel, you raised a hand. Sorry, you wanted to come. Oh, no, you're muted.
Sorry, no sound from Alan says no sound on YouTube.
Oh, no, it's okay now. I fixed it. Sorry, I forgot. I always forget. Okay, it's the last two buttons I got to press. Thank you for telling me. Yes, there are so many stories from that lineup. You go through it from the goalkeeper, Kelleher, at the start of the season, had tons of critics. Connor Bradley and Jarrell Konza. Can you imagine at the start of the season how you would have felt knowing that we were going to play Man City at Anfield with Konza and Connor Bradley in defence, two of our back four from the academy? You might have been a bit bricking it. And then, you know, all of the other stories, Virgil van Dijk has finished, Joe Gomez. I was so, like, regretful about how the way his career was going in pre-season. I was thinking he's done a Des Walker, if you remember Des Walker, because he went to Italy after having played at Nottingham Forest at a very, very high level for Nottingham Forest. He went to Italy and he completely lost his form in his mid-20s for no apparent reason. Like he lost his love of football or something like that. And for me, I was thinking Joe Gomez did the same. But now, of course, this season, he's proved me wrong. Endo and McAllister, what Nigel was saying, in midfield. Wow. Fantastic. And so from that, what are the positives? What are the main positives for you from that match?
Well, I want to start with the goalkeeper because I saw him last year in the League Cup final when we won it, and he won it for us then. And I'm not lying. On Sunday, to me, he was outstanding. He was some of the saves he made. He's one of those goalkeepers that's really, he's good at standing up and then going down at the right time. Honestly, I think if Alisson wasn't our number one, he would be in goal because he's just been amazing. If you look at the goals that he's conceded over the last few weeks, not many, and he's getting better and better from game to game. So I think we both agreed last time when we were speaking about for Liverpool to do well, McAllister has got to start being McAllister of Brighton days. He was outstanding, absolutely outstanding on Sunday. And Endo, well, the amount of balls that he won back, because if he's one of those players that if he sees an opportunity to get his foot in there and nick it off, and he's just amazing. He's probably one of the best I've seen for a long time at doing that, at nicking the ball back. Absolutely incredible. The whole team and the midfield was just outstanding. And like you said, the boys at the back, Van Dijk was just the leader, wasn't he? He was back to his best. That's probably one of the best games I've seen against Man City, even though we did beat them in the semis at Wembley. I saw that game as well when we were just all over them. We were just fantastic, really fantastic.
Totally. Great answer. I mean, I love the way you started with Kelleher as well. He's been brilliant. What a player. What a player. It's incredible. We're joined by Dom from the Road End podcast. Dom, it's an absolute joy you're with us for the first time. Welcome to Cop On Podcast. You might duck in and out of this call, the life is pressing. Life presses its warm iron upon the clothes of our life quite often. But delighted to have you with us. For our listeners and for the people on YouTube, tell everyone about the Road End Pod, please.
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. So the podcast itself is I speak with ex-players, coaches, staff at the football club. I just get to know about their upbringing, how they actually got into football, the decisions, and sacrifices that they made to get to where they got to. And also life after football and life after Liverpool, if anything's can live up to things, which it tends to not. It's a really good, it's a good range of guests that I've had on so far from academy players who never actually made the grade in full-time professional football to international footballers such as, let's say, Ryan Babel as an example. There's quite a few different varieties, ex-physios, like I've said, ex-coaches, and also Liverpool fans that are in a professional game of some sort, so professional boxers, MMA fighters, just a different field, really. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to know, first of all, why, let's say, the ex-Reds got to where they got to and how they got to it, and also dealing with them pressures of playing for the club day in, day out, and afterwards, how much they regret something or how much they miss something about the club. It's fascinating.
It's really fascinating. I love it. I think it's great. So do check it out, listeners. If you could choose one person apart from Jürgen, from the team, maybe, instead of the coaching staff, from this Liverpool team to interview in future episodes, who would it be?
Good question.
I'd go sorry, difficult one.
I go with Pep Linders and ask them why you give our secrets away. No, just kidding. Just kidding. just kidding. It's nothing to do with that last season. I'd probably go with Virgil, to be honest. I think there's so much about him that he's just a colossal of a man, isn't he? I don't know. He just seems to know that everything about the game. He can read the game from back to front. He's a leader of men. And he's just a beast, isn't he? And I think his experience and his knowledge of football, I think it should be fascinating to listen to.
And you could really get into the art of defending, couldn't you? You know, because us lay people, we don't quite understand certain aspects of defending, like, you know, when do you hold the line, what little details. I'd love to, because I like all the details. I'd love to ask him about those kinds of things. But no, brilliant. And also how he makes always the person playing next to him look like a defending god. Doesn't matter who it is. He digs, he love him, for example. But you know, he's such a player. Yeah, good answer. And you know, staying with this season, we were just talking about the positives, because we could look at the negatives being the referee and, you know, certain the refereeing, let's say, in general. In the PGMOL, they should be out. But anyway, we're focusing on the positives from this season. We've had so many injuries, and it's been remarkable this season. But what are you looking forward to in the run-in from here on in? What's making you positive that we're gonna win it all? We're gonna win the quad.
I think just the it feels like a wave again of expectancy of every game that we go into. I feel like we're gonna win, and we had that feeling just before, obviously, the COVID situation, the Premier League that season. There was just a feeling around the club where no matter what the score was or no matter what was going on in the game, we'd come through it. And I kind of feel like the same again. You know, who in the right mind would have thought a bunch of teenage academy products could have won that game with Chelsea at Wembley not long ago? You know, it's ridiculous the way we are at the moment. And I just feel like the wave that we're riding in terms of Jürgen's last season and the players giving that extra 5 or 10% for him, it just bodes well for the rest of the season.
Yeah, great, great answer. I mean, do you get to Anfield much?
Yeah, I only live 3 or 4 miles, well, 4 or 5 miles away.
Okay, so it's an optimistic bike ride, is it, away? Depending on how you're feeling, depending on the weather. Okay, and tell us about, because, you know, loads of us like me live so far away from, not even in England. And, you know, tell us about the, you know, you said the atmosphere. There's a buzz, is there, everywhere, every time you go now? I mean, is it, you know, has it augmented since Jürgen made his announcement?
Yeah, it has, in terms of Jürgen himself. Obviously, listen, I'm no fool, and I'm not going to make something up that isn't there. But Anfield can be questionable at times, and, you know, it can translate across to other fan bases that Anfield can be quiet. But, you know, things are changing, the commercial side of the football ground and the fan base that's in there now compared to the fan base that was there 30, 40 years ago. It's a totally different thing. But when we need to, or when we're there, you know, 50% is the players and 50% is the supporters. We need to get each other up out of our seats. The atmosphere at the moment is what you expect. It's everyone's going into these games expecting wins. They're up for them. They're up for every game. They're up for Jürgen. Basically, it's giving him a send-off that he actually, you know, he deserves. Not many managers would have handed the resignation in, and everyone would have been behind them straight away. You know, it's an emotional time, and it's going to be a difficult last few games at Anfield, no doubt about it. But yeah, in the ground at the moment, I feel like know, there was a moment in the City game when Ederson went down. It's up there with the loudest I've heard Anfield in some time. The Field of Anfield Road being sung round Anfield, just echoing round every stand, every corner of the ground. It was bouncing. Amazing. And I think City felt not only the tidal wave of Liverpool players, but of the support that earlier in the week Pep Guardiola had played down. But then after the game also echoed the noise of this game can be like a tidal wave. So, yeah.
It really was. At that point as well, I mean, that coincides with a brilliant stat I heard from the Blood Red podcast from Beth, the presenter there. She said, I think in the first 20 minutes or 25 minutes of that second half after Ederson went down, Man City had around about 63-64% passing accuracy.
Yeah.
And if you compare that to their usual passing accuracy, which is around 88%, they were swamped. They didn't know what to do. They were hoofing it long. They were closing their eyes and whacking it, you know, as hard as they could just to try, you know, get me out of here, get me out of here. It was a madness. So, yes, you know, it's well documented, the synthesis, as Bill Shankly said, between manager, players and crowd. And it's I think it's good that people are talking about it and that people are aware of it in and around Anfield and they're trying their best to will the players on. And, you know, you can see it a little bit on TV, but what you can't do is you can't hear it because you can hear that it's loud, but because the microphones have got these limiters on, you don't know if it's just as loud as, you know, Atletico Madrid's crowd or whatever, you know. But when you're in the stadium, you get the the full buzz and so I'm glad to hear it was particularly loud at that moment. Nigel, you wanted to come in. Don't forget to unmute the mic.
Yeah, when you were talking there, something just came into my head. Do we think, asking everybody in the panel, that the fact that we have transferred our youth-based teams to training full time at Anfield has that helped our youth policy and brought through something that's really come on leaps and bounds? And we start reaping the benefits in the first team. We've got so many young kids coming through our first team now, so many youth products. So just a quick question, just to ask all the lads.
Good idea. Faye, do you want to go first on this one? Don't forget to unmute the mic. Excellent.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nigel, because they say that Klopp can now just nip across and have a look at some of the sessions where he couldn't before because it was up the road, wasn't it? But so now he is there and they're there as well. So they're looking at some of the sessions as well. You know, when they've finished their bits, they're having a look and thinking, wow, look at Van Dijk. And, well, who wouldn't be in awe of someone like him? And, yeah, I think it's a great question, Nigel. I think that is something that has definitely brought the whole team together because equally the senior boys have now been able to just put their arms around the younger ones as well, because they're seeing them more. So, yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, I agree.
Right. So and that's brilliant. No, you're absolutely right. The psychological impact on these youngsters to be so close to the first team and to have the manager right there and, you know, you do what you can to impress. What do you reckon, Dom?
Yeah, I think it's made a massive difference. I only live two streets away from the actual complex itself.
Oh, wow.
So they go in different entrances of the actual training ground, these young lads and the older lads, and I don't think you've heard. I don't know if you've heard the story of like they're not allowed a certain engine size. They're not allowed the mobile phones. You know, there's a lot that goes into this situation as well. They can't have everything before they've done anything, basically. And I think that does translate into the hunger that they show on the pitch. You're seeing young kids come through basically this system that have definitely got the quality, but have they got the temperament? And they're ticking every box at the moment, aren't they? You know, like you said there, he can go over, he can watch a game, he can watch a training session, he can do anything he wants, and he can just say, do you want to come over to us for the day? It works hand in hand. It's been a brilliant move for the club. I also feel as though the transfer policy is now working well as well. As much as it might not be the best thing for English football, previously it is now, where you can't go out and buy, like, let's say a 14-year-old kid from Spain. They can't come until they're 16 or 17. So now we're hunting more local talent, we're hunting more English talent to come into this side, to into this academy, to then step up when they need to. And I think that'll be good for the country as well. There's definitely more coming through the system, but there's also more coming from other clubs around England, which can only benefit the game.
I think there's something also in this about media money going down. I listened to a very interesting podcast. Was it on the Anfield Wrap? I can't remember. I'm sorry. It could have been Blood Red. I'm not sure. With a financial expert from the Echo anyway. And he was talking about how, I believe his name's Dave Powell, but don't quote me on that. Mm. And he was a really interesting podcast. And he was talking about the future of finance in football and how when media money goes down, which it will, because, you know, it looks like it's already hit a peak. That's going to have a massive effect on funding for wages and transfers and everything. And then you've got changes to how the Champions League is run. You've still got the possibility of a Super League. In terms of finance, because of the, in my opinion, don't sue me, money laundering of clubs like Chelsea and Man City and, you know, these kind of things, where they get so much money pumped into the club that the money isn't made by the club, it creates this very unstable financial environment. So I think the youth team being very close to the first team is going to be very good in terms of saving us a load of wonga going forward. Yes, and speaking, you mentioned transfers there. It's a good time to bring in the fact that, you know, it's the return of the Mickey Edwards. He's back. Dom, are you excited? Do you have a picture of Michael Edwards with his slanted smile? The only picture we have. He's a bit like Kaiser Soze, isn't he? But do you have a picture of that picture with his slanted smile on your fridge?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go as far as that.
Okay.
I'd definitely say I'm excited by his return. I'd much rather Jurgen Klopp be staying, but it is what it is. But yeah, Michael Edwards, and it looks like the guy from Bournemouth as well, Richard Hughes, looks like they're both now on board. And, you know, that can only bode well for the future of the club, really. Because at the moment, the transitional period and the idea of Jurgen leaving, it's like a knife in the heart, isn't it? So it's a bit of it softens the blow. It doesn't fill the gap. But what it does, it provides us with security in the next few years. So bringing these two guys in, operationally fantastic, proven transfer history of Michael Edwards. He clearly trusts the guy he's bringing in himself underneath for these transfers as well. So, you know, you can't replace Jurgen Klopp with one man. You'd have to replace him with a team, and it's a good start. We're ahead of the ball, let's say. You know, now it's time to get the manager in, now that we've got the team behind the doors. And
he seems like the right guy, doesn't he? Because he's a little bit dispassionate. He's got his qualification, I believe, in data science. Or, you know, he wasn't just, you know, he created the data science team, but he comes from a perspective of actually understanding the data as well, which means that he's decisions based on facts as well as instinct. And, you know, I think that's so important because, you know, for example, I look how it goes wrong. Look at Man United, look at Chelsea. They make decisions based on sentiment too much. You know, what do you reckon, Nigel? I mean, you know, when you look at Man United, we're going to play them on Sunday. They signed Cristiano Ronaldo, they signed Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they sign all these players like Mason Mount, Antony,
Maguire. We paid 75 million for Van Dijk, and they suddenly thought, oh, actually, we can go out and spend 80 million on the next English big thing, and he's a better player than Virgil van Dijk. 80 million.
It's insane. We'll do that. Yeah. So Michael Edwards, I mean, so you're happy with him coming back? I mean, you know, it's just, I want to talk about, you know, the importance of getting the structure right. So we've got Michael Edwards, who's going to be back, but in a more senior role, CEO of football for the whole FSG thing. He's going to try and acquire a feeder club, probably. I don't think they would call it a feeder club, but the rumours are that FSG are going to try and buy, for example, a Portuguese club and tap into the Brazilian market that way, and possibly a Spanish club and tap into the rest of South America that way by, you know, bringing players over. They could speak their native language and things, and as a way of getting them into Europe. But I don't know. Are you excited about the structure with then Richard Hughes coming in as director of football?
I'm excited about the structure that we're bringing back a guy who helped us an awful lot the last time and made several very, very astute decisions to where our club are now. I'm not so sure about the acquiring the club thing. There seems to be a bit of a backlash towards that, owning other clubs and stuff like that. But that's the way the American system is. If you look at the baseball system in America, you've got all these the high-end clubs in baseball. They've all got feeder club after feeder club after feeder club all the way down the line to try and build and kind of give a bedrock to the bigger teams. So it's ongoing in America. We have American owners, so that's it's no shock really that they've gone that way. I think it seems to be a way with a lot of things.
But you have faith that it's the right people in this structure as well, right?
Oh,
you're happy with yeah. Michael Edwards and Richard Hughes. Faye, what do you reckon? Because I was looking at their track record. We know Michael Edwards, but just to give you a few names off the top of my head of the people he signed: Andy Robertson, Mo Salah, Virgil, revolutionary players, Fabinho. Wow.
Alisson.
Oh.
Yeah. And the thing is, look at Robbo, what was he, 8 million, something ridiculous? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, what would Robbo be worth now? I mean,
it was actually a free transfer because we gave Kevin Stewart to Hull at the same time. Around the same price.
Yes.
So we got Robbo for nothing, basically.
So Robbo's just profit, isn't he? If you're talking about financial fair play, he's profit if we were to sell him next month.
But I don't know what you know about Richard Hughes, because I was doing a little bit of homework about him. He said a quote that I really like. He said, if you're signing, and I quote Richard Hughes, if you're signing 20 players and a third of that could be a failure, then generally speaking, that's a success. Mm. So I think that's very true. I like that. So in terms of his hits, Faye, for Bournemouth, Dominic Solanke, Callum Wilson, Nathan Ake,
wow.
Iraola as manager, what a decision that was to get rid of the brilliant Gary O'Neill and replace him with an even more brilliant Iraola. Dan Juma, who he managed to make a massive profit on despite him failing at all other clubs. Ryan Christie, who's been a staple of the Bournemouth side for many years. Players like Semenyo, who got two goals last night in the incredible comeback against Luton. And basically the current squad of Bournemouth with its manager, they're punching well above their weight. But on the missus side, MISSES, mm-hmm. I'm not talking about a wife, Jordan Ibe, obviously he had, as we know, plenty of personal issues, but they paid a lot of money for Jordan Ibe and he was, not a success, unfortunately for everyone. And Brad Smith as well, famously, again, they overpaid quite significantly for him. But as he says himself, Richard Hughes, you're going to make mistakes in recruitment, but it seems like he gets far more right than he gets wrong. And that's something that I find encouraging. But on the other hand, he's coming from Bournemouth. Don't we need to get Bayern Munich's director of football? Don't we need to get a more glamorous one, Faye? What do you reckon?
No, not really, because when you look at it, that's where someone like Eddie Howe was there, wasn't he? And, he's got a huge job, which he's doing at Newcastle at the moment. And it's only because of the money situation. Why poor old Eddie? Because I really liked Eddie Howe when he was there. I really did. And I always said if he got to a big club, I reckon he'd do really well. Yes, last season they overachieved. But I think, like I said, we're talking about the whole Bournemouth setup. Eddie was a part of that. So, no, I think the guy coming in will be fine. And like we said, with Michael Edwards at the helm, I think we'll do really well because he's very astute and we know that. We've already seen it. I think what he's got to do now is get Virgil, Salah and Trent signed up very quickly because their contract runs out 2025. So we really do need to get pen to paper. And for me, that would be one of the best things. If I don't know if Salah will stay, because I've read that if Salah stay, Diaz is going, he says. Whether that's true, that's rumours again. But I would love those three to be a part of next season. And with the young lads coming in, I think we could have an amazing team next year. Really amazing team. Scary team. Yeah.
It's already a bit scary for the opposition, isn't it? It's brilliant. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Those three contracts, that would be a beautiful thing to have those three players all extending. But yeah, no, that's very interesting. Yeah, thank you for your thoughts. I mean, we've got to, you know, we can talk for ages about transfers and things like that, but all of that's for the future. It's for the future that's, you know, far away. You need your binoculars for that kind of future. The future that's coming up, we got Sparta Prague tonight as we're recording this, but as most of our listeners will be listening back, they will already know the result, and we won't talk about that game. We're going to talk about Man United, because it's fun to talk about Man United, Dom, because they're rubbish. Ten Hag, apparently, had three games to save his job, right? Two games ago. From that, I'll just try and see. I know they beat Everton 2-0 with two penalties. And they lost to Manchester City 3-1 in a very embarrassing, you know, cowardly way they lost. And you get the feeling that maybe if they get trounced again by Liverpool at Old Trafford, it could be curtains for ETH. I love the guy. I want him to stay for many years. He's exactly the kind of manager, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that I adore, because they do just enough to keep their job, and it perpetuates that we know they're not good enough, don't we? I don't know. Is there a world in which ETH can turn their bullet hole ridden ship around?
No, it's as simple as that. Really, you look at them and you look at the body language of certain players, and they're just not happy, are they? And I think, you know, he's, like you said there, I'd say he's treading water very much so, and just when you think it's the end, he gets a result out the bag, and I'm hoping it's not this weekend's result, by the way. I hope it's a 1-0 win by us in the 89th minute, and he survives another week. I think I'd like that. But yeah, it's regardless of how they're playing or who they're playing or who's the manager, it's still Manchester United, and it's still a game that you've got to go there and you've got to get a result. It's a cup game. It's another chance to lift another trophy, you know. Would you want the quadruple talk squashed because an average Man United has beat you? No, definitely not. Jürgen will want to go into that game with a win. So, you know, obviously you spoke about Prague as well, the Sparta games tonight. We won't be talking about that now, but I think we'll know how serious he is about Sunday when the lineup comes out tonight for this game. I'd personally like to see a couple of the first teamers who need the minutes in there for the game tonight, because I think we're desperate for a solid result Sunday, knock them out, get the fans walking out after 45 minutes again, embarrass them. You know, there's no other team in football that I like destroying, basically, and it's definitely them. So they ruined plenty of our childhood, so let's ruin theirs.
Very good, very good. Oh, just noticed Liz Golden is in the chat. She says, Michael Edwards is a damn genius. Very well said, Liz. Absolutely. A damn genius. And speaking of damn geniuses, Liz has asked, who replaces ETH and will they suck too? let's hope so. Because it is funny. I do have a couple of Manchester United supporting mates who perhaps I've goaded a little too much over the past few years. And they, you know, one of them's, you know, like, why do you enjoy laughing at Man United so much? And I said, well, you know, you laughed at us for 30 years, so exactly. I'll stop in 2043 once that's 30 years after your last league title. To another 19 years of ridiculing them to go. In that first game, that 0-0 that we played earlier this season, I mean, Klopp was delighted with the performance because we got 34 shots away. Only 8 of them on target, 0-0. Nigel, I think that game really played into ETH's tactics, Erik ten Hag's tactics against Man City, because he thought, well, we're one up, let's close the shop, and it doesn't really matter how many shots we concede because it's going to be the same as the Liverpool game, and we'll keep them out because, you know, we'll just we've got a good defence and a good goalkeeper. And that just strikes me as being a bit of a doofus, no?
Yeah, listen, his race is run. Once you put captain's armband on Bruno Fernandes, end of story. look at the comparison between our captain and their captain. Like, our Virgil goes out and leads by example. This guy falls on the ground and whinges and chases after referees all the time. That's be all and end all. They've got a guy up front who is undoubtedly talented, but has bought into his own, what's the word? His own hype. Hype will do for the moment. Unfortunately, I know, a talented guy, but did this thing, did this very good thing in COVID times, but has suddenly decided that he doesn't have to put in an effort on the field and work hard because of what he's done in the past. You know, he seemed to get nominated every year for about 6 or 7 years for Young Player of the Year, which was completely baffling, but what can you do? They've got a goalkeeper who looks like anybody who's seen Platoon, and they see Willem Dafoe's death scene at the end when they see him being shot, Sergeant Elias been shot, and he's up in the air and his two arms are up in the air. Onana, every time the ball is hit straight at him, is like that. if you look at the end of Platoon.
I haven't seen it, but I can imagine his arms are sort of, you know, arms are
up in the air, going down on his knees, and the ball going straight in through his arms.
Looking at his, if I can find it, where is it? Oh, hang on, I'll come back to you. Oh, yeah, there you go. He's actually doing a lot better than you think, you know, Andre Onana in goal. Because, yes, he's a little bit like Sacco was with his passing, because he looks very awkward, but he's actually quite good. Onana's save percentage this season is 74.5%, which is actually third best in the Premier League, which is quite interesting. It might shock some people, because Alisson is first with 75.3%, then Alphonse Areola, 75%, and then Andre Onana, 74.5%. He's a better goalkeeper than people think, but he does have errors.
Just hit it straight at him.
Okay, that's a possibility as well. But no, I mean, last time we went there, we can't get too overconfident, Fate. Last time we went there in the league to Old Trafford, we lost 2-1 last season in the Premier League. And, you know, I mean, the omens are that they'll find it difficult to beat us again, because the last time that Manchester United won consecutive games at Old Trafford against Liverpool was in September 2015. So they haven't won consecutive games against us in Klopp's reign, basically, since September 2015. But also, omen-wise, Liverpool lost our last FA Cup encounter with Manchester United 3-2 in January 2021, a game that I've completely blanked out of my mind. I've no idea, even though it was only 3 years ago. And overall, Liverpool have been eliminated by Manchester United 10 times, more than against any other opponent. So they've got a really good record against us in the FA Cup. And we need to be, like, we can't go in overconfident, because I think that's the thing that's hurt us so many times over the years. I mean, would you concur with that, or would you just, you know, are you just thinking of Harry Maguire and sort of smirking and laughing behind your hand?
Yeah, I'm thinking about the way the boys ended the game on Sunday, honestly and truly. I think if they have that mindset, I'm not sure what team Klopp will put out. I mean, some of the other guys might know what sort of team he's going to put out. I think tonight, because of tonight's match, I think he'll rest a couple of players and bring in probably Mo to get some minutes tonight so that he's fresh for Sunday. Because Mo was, that last half an hour that Mo played on Sunday was amazing. That ball that he put through for Diaz. Diaz should have scored that. Sorry, he should have done. But I think if he plays some of the young ones tonight, which he will do, because we've got such a head where our margin is, what, 4 goals, isn't it? Is it the margin tonight? So,
4-5-1, wasn't it?
The margin's 4. So tonight he can get Mo a little run around, and Robbo needs to probably have another little run around tonight.
Szoboszlai as well.
Sorry?
Szoboszlai as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He needs to have a run around. So on Sunday, if we could go out with the strongest team possible and, like Nigel said, just obliterate them, yeah. Put them to bed very quickly. We need to score. We keep scoring in the second half. Our set pieces are one of the things that I shut my eyes when we have set pieces. I really do. Okay. I do that because we can't afford to be given dangerous set pieces away, corners, free kicks in the dangerous area. But I think if we go out and play like that last half on Sunday, honestly and truly, I think we're unbeatable. I really do. That's my opinion. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's there are mismatches all over the field, and but also tactically, I wonder if Erik ten Hag is going to be bolder than at Anfield, Tom. I don't know, because he parked, you know, the tank, you know, the double decker bus. He wheeled in the tractor and the trailer and the combine harvester, and he parked it all in front of the goal at Anfield. But you would think two things. First of all, he's been very optimistic, weirdly optimistic in his press conferences, Erik ten Hag, about United, you know, United's upturn in form when they won four out of five games or whatever they did recently. Because all of those games, they were outplayed, even though they won. They had like three shots on target and scored three goals, that kind of thing. So he's been weirdly optimistic in press conferences, but then he played so negatively against Manchester City. You would think that from my point of view, I want him to be confident. I want him to come out and set United up to at least attack a little bit, given the feedback he got from the Manchester derby. He's thinking, well, we've got to attack a bit more. I think that'll play right into our hands. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think Marcus Rashford always turns up against Liverpool. So he's going to be the probably the biggest threat on Sunday, regardless of the form that he's been in. He always turns up. It's, you know, it's a massive game for him because he's a Manchester United fan. In terms of Ten Hag, I think when I listen to his interviews after games, before games, it's kind of like he's trying to cover cracks, and he's trying to give some confidence to his players that they don't really have in him. It just kind of feels like he's trying to, you know, say, oh, we played really well, or we can do this, we can do that, we've got threats here, and the players don't believe him when they're on the pitch. So I think, he's, like I said before, he's treading water. But in terms of expansive football, I don't think you're going to get that Sunday. I don't think they can afford to. He'll have looked at maybe doing something along those lines, but he'll have also seen us in the last half an hour against Man City and thought, no. they simply are mismatches all over the football pitch. Maybe a couple of positions you can maybe say they've got an argument for, but nowhere near replacing our players. But they're a dangerous side. They'll hit us on the break, most definitely. I think that'll be the aim for Sunday. You know, the pace of Rashford and Garnacho, they're not the best players in the world, but what they'll do, they'll get in behind. And I think that's when we tend to struggle, when teams go round and turn us over. If they sit in, it's a matter of time before they have to go for it, because their fans are not going to settle for this much longer. The fans are very divided with Ten Hag at the moment, and you know they want to see Manchester United go down with a fight if they're going to lose this game. So it's a difficult one. I can't see anything other than a Liverpool win, but I'm bound to say that. I'd say it's going to be closer than we think, though.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say before the match, but it's a very good point about Rashford. But then, you know, we're going to play Connor Bradley probably against him, or Joe Gomez, and both of those you would figure would be able to handle him. You'd
hope so, but barely. Again, it's a flip of a switch. A Manchester derby, it only takes, you know, Rashford to wake up Sunday morning and think, right, this is the biggest game of my season. It's all it takes. It takes one game for a player to be forgotten about his recent form, and I think he needs that right now.
Well, yeah, but yeah, fair enough. I'm gonna hang on. Let's think about the title. Let's zoom out, Nigel, just for the last few minutes for today. Let's zoom out. I'm gonna try if I can to share my screen, which might be a bit complicated. Hang on, let me see if I can do this. All of the fixtures that are left. I will be able to do this, so hang on. And maybe the people watching on YouTube will be able to see this as well. Let me try and share the screen. Just give me one moment. Press the share button. Because when we zoom out for the title, we've got... there you go. I think Dom's had to leave. He's had some... he's got some things he said before that he might have to duck out, but that's okay. So if we have a look at the title, the remaining fixtures, they're on the screen, or they should be. Can you see those? Maybe they're too small. But we've got Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester United, the remaining fixtures. There you go. Nice and big now. So Arsenal. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Arsenal have got Man City away. That's obviously a difficult fixture. Then Luton at home. That could be tough, you know, because Luton, they scored 3 goals yesterday. Nigel, you're shaking your head. Do you think that's an easy win for the Arsenal?
I do.
Yeah, I think so. After last night, I mean, I think that's got to be a major kick in the teeth for Luton last night. 3-0 up away, and they get beat 4-3. I think that's nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
Okay, you're agreeing. Yeah, but I think Rob Edwards, isn't it? That's his name, the manager. It's not. He's a kind of manager who can galvanise players after a defeat. And I don't think Luton have lost much fight. What do you think, Fish?
Luton is a very difficult place. I told you the Liverpool game this season when we drew to them at Kenilworth Road. I know the result last night wouldn't seem as if they could come out of that, but they know they've got to win all their home games, Luton, if they're not going to go down.
Yeah, but it's away, though. It's away for Luton. It's going to be at the Emirates.
Oh, yeah, that's a no-brainer. It's Arsenal. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I was looking at the other way. Yeah, it's a.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
Oh, God, no. That's a 3-4-0, sadly.
Oh, all right. Oh, well, there you go. I'm the only one who's given Luton a
glow. No, it was just an away game.
But okay, fair enough. Brighton away. Okay, what do we think? Brighton away, that's Arsenal win? Fairly comfortable? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah,
another foregone conclusion for me.
I agree with you. I'm not a Brighton fan. I think De Zerbi's way overrated with what he's doing there. So we've got one difficult fixture so far for Arsenal from three. Aston Villa at home. Now we've got to all agree that that's going to be a bit tough for Arsenal because Villa are going to be fighting for the top four, and they've got Pau Torres back, who makes a big difference for them. I don't know. Does anyone disagree? That's going to be a little bit tough for Arsenal.
That probably is a little bit because they're going for that fourth place as well, aren't they? You don't know what I don't know what games they've got prior to that, Villa. So that could be a tricksy one.
Yeah, I think every game's going to be vital for Villa and between Villa and Tottenham for fighting for that fourth place. As we head towards the end. Okay, so that's a tough one.
Sorry to everyone for a second. I want to see some of these teams go out and putting in a bit of fight and not just sitting back and letting Arsenal come on to. If you go out and get stuck into Arsenal, they're not that good. They're a decent team. They've got some good players, but you've got to go out and get stuck into them. You've got to put pressure on their defence.
I agree. I think that's what Emery's going to do as well. He's, he plays a fairly high line and he's aggressive with the press. I think that's going to be tough for them. Wolves away is another one I think's going to be tough for Arsenal. I'm going to put that as my third fixture out of five that we've talked about for Arsenal that's tough. Anyone agree with me or disagree? What do you reckon, Don?
I genuinely can only see them having difficult games, against City, Tottenham and United.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't see anything else.
Yeah. City, Tottenham and United, because they're away to United in their second or third last game of the season at Old Trafford. It's Arsenal, Manchester United at Old Trafford. And Arsenal, Tottenham is a couple of games before that. And they're the only ones that you're saying are tough for them. You're only saying three. And Faye,
I'm agreeing with the other teams.
The one that might slightly be difficult, maybe Bournemouth. Depends on how back in a position they're in and how far above the drop zone they are. That might
be
slightly difficult.
Well, safe by then, Nigel. Do you think that would make a difference?
If they're safe, then no brainer. Okay. I have to agree with Dom there. I think he's dead right. The three that might be difficult are City, Spurs, and United, maybe.
I don't know. See, okay, well, all right. Well, I'm gonna differ. I'm gonna say City, Villa, Wolves, Tottenham, not Manchester United. I don't think that'll be difficult for anyone. I'm going to say those four. Okay, I'm going to say Villa and Wolves and Tottenham and City. They're the ones that are difficult for me. For Arsenal, the next one, moving along, we have here is of course Liverpool.
You might as well just write in Brazil 1970 into every single one.
Yes, exactly. I feel the same way. Every single one's really tough. Apart from Sheffield United at home, I would say every because I don't know, is that just being pessimistic that every single game is going to be really tough, or is it just what we've learned, isn't it? I mean, we've come from behind so many times this season.
It happens every game, though.
It does. Yeah,
yeah, we don't do things easy, but I'm looking at that fixture list and I'm thinking, if you want to win the Premier League, goodness me, you've got to be having a good go by at least the Aston Villa away game. You know, them games building up to that.
So not many teams
that are competing for much, let's be honest, apart from United, they will obviously for their sense of pride. I think Palace will be staying up comfortably, Fulham mid-table, West Ham, I think they'll just float. Tottenham will be a difficult game, Aston Villa will be a difficult game. And then I'm fully expecting the Everton in between Villa and Wolves to be difficult as well.
Okay, so three difficult ones for you in Liverpool's running. What do you reckon, Faye?
Yeah, I'm about the same on that one. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, so it's just me and Nigel who are bricking it in every single match. Okay, fair enough. Okay, and then we look at Manchester City. Okay, just quickly running through their fixtures. Home or away, I won't bother to say. They've got Arsenal, Villa, Palace, Luton, Tottenham, Forest, Wolves, Fulham, West Ham and Brighton. People have said, like on the BBC, on Sky, on lots of mainstream media that I've heard, that City have the hardest run-in. And I don't know what drugs they're talking
about. I can't see them losing any of those games. The only one possibly is Spurs. Arsenal.
I think Spurs.
Spurs or Arsenal. Possibly. Okay, so Arsenal is going to be at the Etihad.
Referee man of the match for City in every game.
The referee will be man of the match. Well, there you
go. No, the referee man of the match for City in every game.
Well, yeah, I mean, there you go. There, yeah. Nigel, you're there with your conspiracy theories, which may well be true. Who knows? Okay. But yeah, okay. So, yeah, okay. So, two difficult matches then, Arsenal and Tottenham. Is anything else difficult? I don't think so.
I think they've got the easiest running.
Yeah.
I would say they do. Yeah. Two difficult ones on paper. But there's always the mistake from City, you know, because at this stage, it's like any of the past five seasons, apart from last season, where, you know, a draw is as good as a defeat, right? Mm. And I think that City have it in them, especially this season, because they look dodgy at the back. You know, their defenders, apart from Ake, who I really like, I would say that they're a little bit dodgy. So I would say that they've got a draw in them. Again, I'm banking on Wolves. I'm putting all of my coffee into the Gary O'Neill cup and I'm going to sip it to kingdom come. Faye, you wanted to come in?
I was just going to say the Forest game away, depending on where Forest are at that moment, that could be a tricky one because I've been to the Forest ground as well and that City ground is a very intimate ground. And if Forest are sort of 2 points above that drop zone, that could be a very tricky, tricky fixture for Man City. Yeah.
I think Palace
is an awful place as well to go.
Just think Man City's record against Palace isn't great. And they always seem to have a little bit of a bogey side with Palace. The manager looks like he's playing a nice bit of brand of football. Yeah. You know, they're still fighting, let's say. They're not safe exactly. No. City have definitely got a slip up in them, but it's difficult to say it, isn't it, on previous years, how they're going to slip up anywhere. But I think the Arsenal game, they should come through comfortably. Aston Villa, the same, because John McGinn will be out still for that game. And then, yeah, I think Palace might be a difficult one for them.
Very interesting. I think with Palace, it depends on the happiness of Michael Olise and Eze. Because I think they're by far their best players. I love those players. Super, they're brilliant. Players. And I just think that, you know, you could tell that they were very unhappy towards the end of Roy Hodgson's reign because obviously they had, you know, zero freedom of expression. So I just think if the new manager has given them, I haven't seen how they've been playing with the new manager, but I take your word for it that it's... that he's, you know, that they're playing a lot better, and it wouldn't be hard. But I just think, you know, exciting, flair, creative players, if they're given the freedom of expression, then they can, that's when the whole team is dangerous. Yes, Nigel?
Just one more thing. Looking at those games as well, for the Brighton game, we might be back to full strength.
Oh, wow.
We might have Ali back, we might have Trent back, we might have Jota back.
I heard that Ali's might be the end of the season for Ali.
Really? Okay. But well, still, if we can get Trent back and we can get Jota back and we can get our players fit, more fully fit, and some of the rest of the lads fully fit, and like hitting the ground running, we could run through those teams. hopefully.
Well, we've got, you know, the possibility of getting 94 points. And I think if we play like we did in the second half, we're going to get 94 points. We're going to win all of our matches. So I'm flip-flopping between petrified and absolutely 100% optimistic, fully getting my, you know, getting my jogging lycra on and running through the forest of joy of Liverpool wins. Faye, sorry, you wanted to...
Yeah, just very quickly, we're going to have a few cup games possible as well. And that's what we've got to be careful of, haven't we? Because sadly, that's where our injuries have come in. So we've got, obviously, if we win on Sunday, we've got the semi-finals and possibly the final. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the Europa. So there's going to be some, but and Man City are in a similar position because they're in the quarterfinals as well.
And
as
Arsenal. And Arsenal,
I mean, it's going to, I don't know, we haven't got a crystal ball, but I'm sure something is going to happen.
I think if you look at any of the squads, this is probably the first time since I can remember that we've actually got the squad that can compete on all fronts. Where I'm looking at Arsenal, I don't think they've got the bench, me personally, to do the long run in terms of the Champions League and the Premier League. You know, they've had a really, I wouldn't call it lucky, but they've had a really good season in terms of injuries. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I wouldn't wish hurt on anyone, but they pick a couple of niggly injuries up. Whereas, you know, we've had them throughout our season. I don't think City's strong as I thought it was in terms of their squad. The defence is very suspect for me. Very suspect. And, you know, if it depends how these two clubs get on in the Champions League, because if them two go out with a wimp in the next round, which I can't see, then the Premier League's ambition number one, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's, but it's, what's I going to say? About Arsenal, yeah. I mean, it could be that, it could be injuries or just fatigue. Klopp mentioned it in post-match press conference or one of the post-match interviews recently that, you know, Arsenal haven't rotated really. And it could just be fatigue more than injuries as well, because as they progress through the Champions League, I thought the fact they went to extra time and penalties against Porto was perfect for us.
Lovely. Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, long may that continue in the Champions League, because they've got a brilliant, brilliant first 14, you could say. But beyond that, I totally agree. They don't have the you know, the Conor Bradleys or the Jarrell Kwanzas or the Kostas is of this world.
Or the songs.
Or the songs, yes.
Yeah. Well, yes. They took our Ale 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 song, where our first line is, "We conquered all of Europe." How do you get better than that?
Well,
they
can't. Well, yeah, I don't know. They conquered all of, I don't know, North London.
KFC. But they
do. I don't know what they've conquered. But they yeah. Yeah, okay. I don't know. I think that's where Arsenal will fall down, is their lack of rotation and Arteta's lack of rotation. But we'll see. Before we go, just quickly wanted to, I don't know, talk about anything that, you know, you want to plug or anything that you want to. Obviously, the Road End podcast. Thank you very much, Dom, for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure hearing your views. You know, where can people get the Road End podcast? Does people just need to go on that crazy thing called Google and search Road End podcast, I imagine?
If you go onto my Twitter page, which is the Road End Pod, you can, there's a link on my bio, and it's just got every platform that you can listen to the podcast on. There's it's available on YouTube to watch as well. Three seasons in now, I think there's 19 episodes per season, 19 just on the basis of we've won that many league titles. And there's a few exclusives in there with different media outlets or different sports pundits. There's a fourth coming. I haven't started recording as yet. I've just took a bit of time just to sort of enjoy Liverpool for a little bit. I didn't want to start season four with just any guest, and you know, it meant nothing. These mean something to me. It's not just a case of I'm recording just for chatting to a footballer or something. Everything that I do, there's a meaning behind it. So hopefully that comes in the next few months, but there's a load to catch up on. If you haven't already, it'd be nice to have you around.
Yeah, get on that, listeners. And Faye, I wanted to ask you about the brilliant work you do, because I was looking at your social media and you're an ambassador for various things. What tell us about that? What's going on with all that?
Yeah, I'm an ambassador for Lawrence Dallaglio's Rugby Works, and that's about young people, sadly, out of school and trying to direct them into rugby in a positive way. So that's, I'm fairly new, I'm an ambassador for that, and that's a fairly new charity. Ripple Suicide Prevention, you can look that up on their website. I wear their band all the time, and Fantastic. It's a really good organisation. It's a preventative tool to support people that are feeling low. You can go on there and read up. NSPCC, everybody knows about them. And so I'm doing a few bits of charity work, and I love sports. I've been involved in sports for 40 years as a National League basketball player and coach. And obviously I've supported Liverpool. Like I said, from the day my dad landed in Liverpool from Barbados, he landed there, and that's why Liverpool's close to all the family, because he was stationed in Cardiff afterwards and then moved down to Suffolk. But Liverpool's the team. Yeah.
Excellent stuff. Well, thank you very much for sharing all that. And if anybody does have a spare couple of pounds, couple of euros, couple of, you know, whatever currency you've got, some Polish zloty, then chuck them the way of one of those fabulous causes that Faye represents. So, brilliant stuff. Nigel, you got any final thoughts or anything to plug?
No, just hopefully we get to see some more of the young players tonight, guys like Bobby Clark and maybe Carter Pennington. I saw a rumour about that earlier on, young centre-half. Yeah. We might be seeing some more good young lads tonight. So hopefully now it'll be... And what's the possibility of maybe young Morozak making his debut in goal? That could be a possibility.
People were, you know, asking the question whether we should play Adrian, and I just put the gif of over my dead body because I'm sorry to be so harsh, but I mean, I love the guy. I would love to have him at my barbecue, have a nice chat. He seems like a really good guy, but I'd rather give a young person, you know, a youngster a chance in goal, because, you know, it's just good for their careers. But, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, because Sparta were dangerous. We needed Queeve last week.
We did.
We hit some crucial saves again. And, so we'll see. But looking forward to it, that's the main thing, Liza. I'm exactly like you. Looking forward to every single Liverpool match. Whoever we put out there on the pitch, we know that they're going to represent us by, you know, never giving in and by giving everything they have and by working together and to, you know, all these great values that we all love. Thank you very much. So, you know, thank you very much to Faye and to Nigel and to Dom. And to every single one of you listening, and also the people in the chat, including Doug from the Dugout Football Channel. Hello, Doug. And thanks to Liz for staying with us. And, and Alan was in the chat as well. So thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you soon. You'll never walk alone. Thank you. Bye-bye.